Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something
today's special guest host is Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian.
First apologize to the shots and the ties for your makeup. Cause I'll make you
good morning, Memphis. If you consider this a good morning. This is Drew Hill filling in for Jeff Calkins. I've filled in on the show plenty of times before. If you don't know me, I'm the Memphis Grizzlies beat writer over at the Daily Memphian.
And they're not going to rook us.
Yeah, they're not going to rook us. I say it might be a good morning only because we've had a lot of bad news circulate in very early as far as college football goes, and the Grizzlies lost again yesterday. So it may not be the most positive morning to talk about sports, but there are plenty of times when I do come on this show, and there are a lot fewer sports to talk about. So I guess we can be thankful for that. We're going to have Jeff on at the top right now, and then we're going to have him on in the second segment as well. And then we're going to have Chris Harrington on the show at 10 o'clock, as always. And then we're going to have my old friend Aaron Suttles, who hosts a radio show down in Birmingham and covers Alabama, on at 10:25 to talk about the college football news. But because I am the Memphis Grizzlies beat writer, I do want to start with the Grizzlies. They lost yesterday, 108-99, to the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors looked much better on defense than the Grizzlies. There were times when the Grizzlies' youth showed, and the Raptors locked them down pretty good. But that's what a good team does. After the game, Ja Morant was mostly encouraged by what he saw, said that there was a lot of positive things the team could take away. But the reality is the Grizzlies' play-in chances are, I don't want to say slipping away, because they still have a good chance to get in this play-in. But it's no longer a given that they're going to be in this play-in game, I think, when you look at the rest of the schedule. So I want to bring on Jeff Calkins now. Jeff, what's going on? What did you make of the Grizzlies game yesterday? And are you now, like me, becoming increasingly concerned that they might miss the play-in?
Well, I agree with you. This is a momentous day, and could be a momentous week, and honestly a damn depressing week, because I think if you had asked me what sport I want the most to play, it would be college football, like NFL college football. It would be one of those two, and it would probably, like, I cared more personally about about the NFL growing up.
You know what? Screw the Grizzlies at the moment. Let's talk college football.
Well, I mean, we'll get to the Grizzlies. We will get to the Grizzlies.
Yeah,
I want to talk about the Grizzlies, and we'll talk about college football.
Let's just get
the
most depressing part out of the way first.
We're going to get to all of this, but I do think it's momentous, and I don't think people, like, literally Friday, you had a situation where, you know, you had the SEC releasing their two, you know, their extra games everyone's going to play, and it felt like, okay, here we go, and, you know, last week we had ticket plans, even if they were thin, whatever, and then all of a sudden the MAC cancels, and so college football is, you know, and you know, Pat Forty and others are reporting that basically they believe that this week it will all get shut down. Now, there's reports, I saw John Talty said that the SEC is not there yet and whatever. We'll talk about that the next segment, but it is a momentous time, and we do have a lot to get to in terms of that and everything else. In terms of the Grizzlies, it's Ja's birthday. Is that right? 21 years old?
21. What did you do on your 21st birthday? Anything fun?
I have no recollection at all of my 21st. I guess that's a good thing. No.
Is the drinking age still 21 when you turn 21?
Drinking was not an issue at 18. Like, I don't really know. Like, I think it was probably 18. I don't really know. It was not. My birthday is September 18th. And so for me, birthday always started early in the college year, right? And sometimes, and Harvard tended to start late, so sometimes I was up there, you know, there weren't a lot of people around, whatever. But no, I did not have a momentous 21st birthday. Ja, of course, has had his daughter had a first birthday and celebrated that with a win, and now he has a 21st birthday, and we will see where that goes. I don't know. Like, I'm on the Grizzlies. To me, well, first of all, why don't you, Drew, just so we know, just to set the stage, why don't you take people through what the scenarios are right now with the Grizzlies? They seem likely to be in the play-in game, highly likely to be in the play-in game.
I don't know about that. I'm not convinced yet.
Let's go disaster first. The Grizzlies obviously play the Celtics, and then they play the Bucks, neither team has anything to play for.
Correct.
But let's assume they go 0-2.
Yeah.
In order for the Grizzlies to go 0-2, if they go 0-2, I think we can pretty much guarantee that they will not be the 8th seed, because Portland's going to win a game. Don't you believe that? Portland finishes with Brooklyn, right?
Right. Yeah, no, I think Portland is going to at least win the last game. I think the chances are probably better that Portland goes 2-0.
Okay, so they're not. If the Grizzlies go 0-2, they will not be the 8th seed. Now let's go to the 9th seed. If the Grizzlies go 0-2, which is totally possible that they go 0-2, what has to happen for them to be bumped out of the 9th seed?
They would either the Spurs or the Suns would have to win out the rest of the way. And the Spurs, or the Suns, play the Thunder, the Sixers, and the Mavs. Now, the Thunder don't have much to play for and honestly could be trying to avoid playing the Rockets, so they might want to lose to the Suns.
The Suns are a 5-point favorite today.
Yeah, the Suns are a big favorite today. The Sixers have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons hurt, and then the Mavs in the last game of the seeding games could have nothing to play for, so I think it sets up decently for the Suns to try and win out.
You wouldn't say it's likely, but nothing about the Suns thing has been likely.
Right.
I think that is a real threat. That if they run the table, if the Grizzlies go 0-2 and they run the table, the Grizzlies could get bumped. Okay,
and then the Spurs, you could almost argue, are in an even better situation because they only have to win two games to win out. And they play the Rockets, who are resting players right now. And I don't think Russell Westbrook has played in either of the last two games, and they don't really have anything to play for. And then they play the Jazz, and the Jazz, like the Thunder, also would like to avoid playing the Rockets, it feels like, in that number 5 spot, and that's the last game, so you assume teams will be resting players. So Spurs could go 2-0 in that scenario.
So both of those are a real threat to run the table, which means the Grizzlies pretty much have to win one of the two games.
To clinch a play-in spot, the Grizzlies either need to win a game. They need, to clinch the 9th spot, the Grizzlies either need to win a game or they need the Suns and the Spurs to lose at least one.
And both of them. Both of them have to lose. Yes, both of them have to lose. Okay, now let's go slightly more promising situation, okay? Let's say the Grizzlies split their next two games, all right? They have two games left. Let's say they split the games. What has to happen for them in that circumstance to be the eighth seed in the play-in and therefore only have to win one play-in game?
Portland would have to split their games as well.
And Portland has, tell the people.
I don't have it right in front of me. Hold on.
Portland ends up.
Portland has the Mavericks and the Nets. So
okay. What you really need is Portland to lose to the Mavs if you want the Grizzlies to be the eighth seed.
And the Grizzlies have to win a game.
And the Grizzlies have to win a game. Okay. Now let's say the Grizzlies split. If the Grizzlies split, the other two teams are eliminated. They can't catch them. They can only be 8 or 9.
Yeah, they could finish with the same record as the Suns, but they have the tiebreaker over the Suns. And then in a scenario where they split, they have the better winning percentage against the Spurs. So they have the tiebreaker against both of those teams.
And obviously, if the Grizzlies go 2-0, then they will be the 8th seed. So there you have it. So that is the situation. Yes, they could go 2-0 if Boston and Toronto, if Boston and the Bucks are heavily resting players, Grizzlies motivated, they could go 2-0 and lock up the eights. If Grizzlies split, they could still, as long as Portland loses a game, which it basically would be to the Mavs, probably, because you assume they're going to beat Brooklyn.
Well, the Nets did beat the Clippers yesterday.
Yes, they did. But then you can at that point pencil in the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies could be 8. For 9, all they have to do is either win a game or have the other two teams, San Antonio and the Suns, not run the table.
What do you think is more likely? I was going to ask you. The Grizzlies win a game or those two teams both lose at least one?
I think what is likely is the Grizzlies split, but I think that's only marginally likely. I think it's either 0-2 or split. And I think they'll win again. And so I don't think it will ultimately matter if those two teams run the table or not, because I think the Grizzlies are going to split. If the Grizzlies don't split, I'll be honest, I won't then be particularly invested in them backing in by having, the other team to lose a game. I don't really like – if literally the Grizzlies have won one game down there, I don't need them to be – with all due respect, I don't need them to be in ninth and have one extra game against Portland. So I'm more focused on whether the Grizzlies can actually split and salvage a little something from this. I mean, they've already gotten the experience, and they've gotten some things from this. This has been revealing in interesting ways. Grayson Allen has certainly revealed himself with double figures in every game to be an interesting piece going forward, which you just never would have thought before the bubble. De'Anthony Melton has revealed his limitations, and so it's a little bit harder to get too exuberant over him. Heading into the future, not that he's not a valuable piece, but I think you have a little sense of reality with De'Anthony Melton. Obviously, Dylan Brooks, we'll talk about in a minute. But even as much as it's just Dylan Brooks and he's revealed himself to be what he is, I think it has really revealed the weaknesses this team has at wing generally, and how critical it will be. And maybe it's just Justice Winslow, but ultimately, this team is going to have to address the wing situation and be better at wing if they are to be what they want to be. So I think they've gotten things from this trip no matter what. But in terms of getting to be ninth so you can get beaten one more time by Dame Lillard, I don't need that. I'm not invested in that at all. If the Grizzlies can't split these next two games, I don't care if they're ninth.
Right.
Do you?
No, look. Just the way I kept it real, and I'm not coming in all sunshine and rainbows today saying they're for sure going to be in the play-in, because I don't know if that's going to happen. I also think the way you have to look at this, and maybe it's not fair to the Grizzlies because they're missing three very important players to their team, clearly, but they're not getting past the Lakers. They're not making any noise against the Lakers in the first round.
No, they're just going to get funked by the Lakers.
And they're probably not going to beat beat the Trailblazers, even if they have, even if they finish eighth.
They might beat them. They could get lucky. They could beat them once. They could, someone could get hot. It's a basketball game.
So,
like, if they're eighth, I don't rule out the possibility that they could win one game against the Blazers. I wouldn't pick them,
yeah.
You know.
So let's be honest. We are invested in our own fun here. Like, we are invested in the fact that we just want to be able to watch more Grizzlies basketball, even though it might be losing basketball. But, you know, that's what I think that most of the fans are invested in at this point. The Grizzlies, and you kind of hear it after all of these games and these post-game pressers, are less interested in that and more interested in getting better as a basketball team and recognizing what this opportunity is when you look at it from a realist perspective. And so I think it makes a lot of sense when Ja says, well, we looked pretty good, or when Taylor, when people are frustrated after
it was a little weird. They did not look good. Let's be honest. Yesterday, here's what it looked like. It looked like one championship-level team, which is really a credit to Toronto after losing Kawhi, that they look that good, and one team that's not ready for prime time, which is there's no problem with that. Like, they're way ahead of where they should have been and whatever else, and the future's as brilliant as I ever thought it was and whatnot. But I didn't think they looked good yesterday. Did you?
No, I mean, I didn't think that they looked great, but I think that overall, when you look at the trip, that there have been some positive signs. I mean, they've been down in almost all of these games, and they've fought back in all of the games, and I thought they looked pretty good against Portland. They didn't play good against New Orleans, but they showed some heart in that game. They looked better against OKC, even though that game wasn't really close. I mean, I think that there are encouraging signs to come from this. I'm just saying,
I'm just talking about yesterday when he said we look good. They did not look good yesterday. It was funny because Ja, the one thing with Ja, it's very clear now. Ja, and this goes to the chip on his shoulder thing. Ja has twice now in post games reached for Zoom calls, reached for the stat sheet, right? And each time it's when the question is something about what did the other team do to stop you, right? I like this about Ja. He takes offense that another team can stop him, right? That anyone can do anything with him. So what he did was he reached for the stat sheet, yes, and he said, 10 assists. Looks like I did pretty good. They didn't really stop me. And, of course, I mean, the truth of the matter is Nick Nurse is a great coach. I thought Toronto did a, you know, they took Jonas out of the game. You know, they threw big bodies at Ja. They let Memphis shoot. I'm not being critical of any of this. I just don't think, and I do think that the appropriate focus is on process. That's true from the staff. It's true from the organization. It's true from the players. And the truth of the matter is, it's true from fans. It's why I'm not actually invested in whether they get into the play-in game or whether they get into the playoffs, because I think the process is what matters here. And what you're learning about the team and about themselves is what matters here.
That was particularly
true when the injuries,
yes,
when the injuries hit, you know?
Yeah. No, especially when the injuries hit. Because if they had Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Tyus Jones, and you insert Justice, and they're trying to get a feel for each other and see, you know, how he's going to work in the lineup and what the future might hold there, then, you know, having a playoff series against the Lakers, or even two play-in games against the Blazers, I think, one, the games are closer and more interesting, and two, they become actually very important and not games where you go in feeling like it's going to be a loss from the beginning, no?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to the elephant in the room, and that is Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks is not why they lost yesterday. Once again, let's just say that. They were outclassed fundamentally by a really good team. Even when it gets close to the end, Pascal Siakam comes in and hits 2-3. Like, it's a hell of a team on the other side. But where is Dylan right now? If the and you haven't been covering this team for as long, but, and I'll ask Jeffrey this too, in terms of the scream at your own player on the television or on the video on TV quotient, if we're measuring by how much you screamed at your own player, Where is Dylan rank all-time Grizzlies now, Jeffrey? What do you think about this? This is because, like, even Chandler, you didn't really scream at the – because you didn't get to see him much. He wasn't on the court.
Right.
Where is Dylan in the scream at your own player metric?
He hasn't quite entered the Jeff Green zone, but he is at the door.
He is really up there, man. Like, are those the two? Are those the two who are most –
I mean, there were people
would get Tony Allen when he went in and did a dumb thing, but it was always – there was a little bit out of love, too. You know, like, you knew there would be a compensating
– Right, when he dribbled, people would scream, be like, you can't do that.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Or what, whatever.
I think there was some frustration with Mark when he wouldn't take over and dominate.
When he wouldn't shoot. Yeah.
But – I mean, even going back
into a different type of frustration. Not doing something versus doing too much of something is very different.
Correct. Yes. That it speaks better for you as a player when the frustration is we want you to shoot more, whereas the frustration is stop shooting. And I think with Powell there was some frustration on he's soft, but it's like hindsight's been good to Powell. It's like, wow, those were some really crappy teams around him. Jay Will never really got the kind of frustration.
No, I think it's literally
Andrew Harrison. Andrew Harrison is right there.
Andrew Harrison got a lot of it. Yes, he was much screamed at. But I think we're down to. I think it may be Jeff Green and Dylan. And I'm quite confident Jeff Green never took 26 shots for the Grizzlies. I don't think that ever happened, right? Because he was on a better team. Now, in fairness to Dylan, like, there is a real limitation at, like, on the wing right now. So Dylan obviously is feeling like he has to do more. But, like, that screenshot of Dylan jacking up the shot with Grayson wide open in the corner waving – is, you know, that is going to be how Dylan is remembered forever. Here's my question. It's twofold. Well, here's the first question. How concerned are you about Dylan Brooks fitting in long-term and being a valuable piece of this team going forward, given what we've seen in the bubble? We'll start with Drew.
I'm not that concerned because I think that moving forward, the Grizzlies are going to address that need for a player that can shoot it 26 times and score a lot more points. Not that Dylan isn't capable because he has had big scoring outbursts, but it just doesn't seem like when he doesn't have it, he doesn't know how to turn it off. I think that they're going to address that, and then when Dylan moves into a different role or has fewer minutes, then he could be used and useful and, you know, effective in that role. I just don't think that.
Has he have the mindset now where he can ever effectively inhabit a lesser role? Or will he always be,
always think he's going to be a flamethrower. Like, I think he's going to fire up a bunch of shots. Yeah, no, I always think that he's going to be that type of player. But I don't, if he's not on the court for all that period of time, then then he's not going to shoot as many shots. And I think that that's possible. No?
Jeffrey, what's your question? What's your answer to that question?
Yeah, to me, one of the big questions, you know, and you've kind of touched on it in terms of limitations and whatnot, what they have in terms of actually on the wing, but is Taylor Jenkins cool with this? 26?
I'm going to get to that for the next question. That's not my question. My question was how – that's my next question, which is what do we think about Taylor Jenkins' role in this? Now I'm asking particularly about Dylan. What do we think Dylan can be an effective player moving forward?
I think he can, but I think it's up to at a certain point, like, it's not Dylan's fault he's on the floor.
Okay, well, now I'll move into the next question. How much of what's happening here do you say it's time for Taylor Jenkins to take a because that was going to be my next question. This is as much on Taylor Jenkins as it is on Dylan Brooks. We'll start with Drew. Drew.
Where is he going to go? Who does he have?
I mean, that's kind of it's the catch-22, and it's part of the roster flaws, the fact that Dylan Brooks does add value to this team.
Yeah.
And so you're having to do this cost-benefit analysis of, okay, when he's on the floor with Ja, that allows Ja to be, you know, not take on as much responsibility on the defensive end. That helps out on the offensive end. But then, you know, you got to deal with about every other possession. You got to deal with a bad shot.
I still think a Dylan Brooks bad shot is probably better than a Kyle Anderson bad shot, you know? Like, somebody's got to shoot
it. First of all, would they take as many bad shots if Dylan wasn't taking the bad shots?
And right,
here's my second question. I mean, the way I look at this, though, is at some point, is it not about who you have? It's about simply asserting, Dylan, you can't do this.
Right.
We're talking about process, right? We're talking about process and lessons and whatever else. At some point, does it become, I don't really care who I have. I'll put, you know, it just doesn't matter. I'll put Marco out there. Like, if you're going to do that, you'll sit because we don't need that.
Yeah,
what
I think is, and Taylor has, Dylan's got a lot of rope here. You know, he can do whatever he wants on the court, at times. But I don't think that it goes unnoticed by Taylor Jenkins and that Taylor Jenkins just brushes it off and doesn't say anything. Because when he got asked about it after the game, he got asked about Dylan. And the question kind of set him up to compliment Dylan, if we're being honest. But the question was, you know, what's it say about him that he just keeps shooting and then he was finally effective at the end of the game? And Taylor said, look, you know, during timeouts and at halftime, we had to say, and he doesn't use Dylan's name specifically. He always says we need to take better shots. We need to, but clearly a lot of that falls on Dylan. So it doesn't go unnoticed by Taylor Jenkins. I guess he could be more assertive, but again, somebody's had like the shots are going to come from somewhere. That's the truth. And he doesn't have very many. He doesn't have a lot of other options outside of Dylan.
Yeah, but very clearly, you just had to look at the screenshot that everyone saved,
right.
And you know there were better shots available than the shots that Dylan took.
True,
right? And
true. So, that's true.
And in the end, I guess I think I'm with you. Here's the truth: I don't think Taylor Jenkins is stupid. That's one thing I'm pretty confident about Taylor Jenkins. Indeed, I don't think anyone in the organization, you know, is stupid. It is a very brainy group over there, and they're totally aware of what's going on. And I think really they're like, okay, I think you're exactly right. It's like, what do we got? You know, this is not turning out the way we wanted because we don't have the players who we thought we would have here. But do I think this is indicative of next year? Do I think if this was happening in game two of next year when Justice Winslow is available or whatever else, do I think that they wouldn't address it more? Yeah, of course they would. Don't you think? I mean, in the end, I guess that's what I think. I think this is, they're not morons. It's not like I have to tell them, hey, Taylor Jenkins, did you ever think about reining in Dylan a little bit? You know, he thinks about it a lot more than I do. So, okay. If you've been wondering, by the way, we used to have Chip Wiggins. I used to talk about Chip Wiggins from Affordable Blind all the time. And if you wondered where he has been and why we haven't had him on to talk about recently, it's because Chip Wiggins has been busy. He has purchased and created a factory. I visited it last week, where if you, for example, order Plantation Shutters, instead of literally everyone else, Plantation Shutters, if you're buying them in Memphis, they're getting it from China, and they're taking months and months to get here. Here, they are building their own right down out there in Memphis. He has his own factory now. He has his own showroom. If you order Plantation Shutters from Affordable Blinds, you could go out and see them being built. It is a, you know, people talk about buying American. How about buying Memphis? How about supporting Memphis craftsmanship that is done in Memphis? I'll be talking more about it. It was so much fun to go out there yesterday and last week and see where they are actually building these. They do have a sale right now on blinds if you're interested in blinds as well. But it's very exciting. Chip Wiggins and Affordable Blinds have their own. They used to have a mobile showroom they would bring to your house and whatever else. And I actually have new Plantation Shutters going into my house that I got from the mobile showroom. Now you can go out and see everything they're doing, and you can literally see your Plantation Shutters being built if you are so inclined. You don't have to, though, and they can get them to you now in 9 days. Again, everyone else getting them from China, it takes you know, 8 to 12 weeks, something like that. If you want to get in touch with Chip, and you should, 901-753-5822. 901-753-5822. Or go to the website and check it out, affordableblindsllc.com. Affordableblindsllc.com. We said it's a big week, could be a big week. A lot of developments in college football. We will talk to them when we return. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
The way Paul Cowers phrased it to me is, it's on full blown, no holds barred. And he was talking, of course, about O'Call's semi-annual sale. It'll never be better than it is right now, with savings on all spring and summer merchandise throughout the store. Women's clothing is 50 to 70% off. Men's clothing is 30 to 50% off. And there's new merchandise arriving every single day. I'd go just to check out the brand new performance knit shirts. Brand new patterns, brand new styles. It's still hot out there, isn't it? Now is the time to get the performance knits you need. As for me, my eldest son Ben celebrated his 23rd birthday the other day, and I've already promised I'll take him to the semi-annual sale. His wardrobe needs some freshening up as he starts a new job after college. Plus, we'll get some new five-pocket pants by Brax and by Peter Millar. Whatever you need, there's simply no better time to stop in and see your friends at O'Call. It is their semi-annual sale, and it's no holds barred.
Hey, everybody, this is Coach Penny Hardaway. When I want to throw a party for friends or family, I want it to be a taste of Memphis, and that means Corky's Barbecue. Order online or call ahead and pick up at their speedy drive-thru. And be sure to tell them that Penny sent you.
The best,
awesome. Yeah. The best radio stations in America live on radio.com. Atlanta's V103, number one for hip-hop and R&B. The world-famous 106.7 KROQ, LA and Orange County's alternative. Chicago's finest rock, 93 XRT. Alice at 97.3 with the Bay Area's best music and lots more. Find them and listen to what you want when you want on radio.com, on your desktop, smart speakers, or the free radio.com app.
She serves too. Women make up about 16% of the American Armed Forces, and they've got a story to tell. From what it's like to wear the nation's military uniform and break glass ceilings while in the military, to transitioning to civilian life when their tour of duty is complete. Stay connected to the unique perspective of female veterans at ConnectingVets.com.
Whether you were a soldier, sailor, airman, or Marine,
ConnectingVets.com.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet. The faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
For muscle pain, body aches, to strains, Blue Emu Maximum Arthritis. It works fast and you won't stink. Its unique formula with emu oil penetrates deep to relieve arthritis pain, sore muscles, joints, and more.
Sometimes our food is more than just food. It's an integral part of our community. So this year, Discover is giving $5 million to support Black-owned restaurants. To places like Post Office Pies in Birmingham, Alabama, Back in the Day Bakery in Savannah, Georgia, and hundreds more Black-owned restaurants in your local community, all across the country. Learn how you can show your support at discover.com.
Morning.
How'd you get in my house?
Me? Through the air conditioning vent. It's dark in there.
Go away.
How about some Honey Nut Cheerios?
Cheerios. Do I look like a child to you?
Honey Nut Cheerios are tasty and can help lower cholesterol as part of a heart-healthy diet. Did you just
No.
I'm pretty sure I heard a
It was my dryer.
You might want to get that thing checked out.
Have a change of heart. Honey Nut Cheerios. Learn more about Honey Nut Cheerios by picking up a box at your local store.
I'm United States Surgeon General Jerome Adams, America's doctor. And all across our nation, we've taken steps together to slow the spread of coronavirus. Now we must continue to take personal responsibility to protect ourselves and our loved ones. Because even though not all of us risk a severe case of coronavirus, we all risk getting it and spreading it to others, maybe without even realizing that we're sick. So if we want to get back to school, back to work, back to worship, and back to overall health, there are things our country needs to do. We need to follow state and local guidelines. Take extra precautions if at higher risk. Wash our hands frequently. Stay 6 feet from others when we can. And when we can't stay 6 feet from others, please, I'm begging you, wear a face covering. These small actions will make a big difference. So I'm asking you to say it with me, America. Coronavirus stops with me. You can learn more at coronavirus.gov.
Produced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services at taxpayer expense.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Triumph Bank does make banking easy for you. It makes banking easy for me, which is not easy. I'll be honest. The idea of making banking easy for me, given my technological incompetence, is not easy. But Triumph Bank somehow manages to do it. And I said this before, that I think, listen, at this time we've seen how important it is to have institutions that have your back, that are, in fact, invested in you. And it's the difference between some giant bank that's, you know, sold 17 different times and changed names 5 different times, and your eyes adjust into that, and a bank that was started here in Memphis in 2006 and has grown into a power but still has that that intimate approach to banking that you just don't see anymore. It's my bank should be your bank. Triumph Bank is investing in the community and making banking easy for you. All right, we're talking about college football. Could be a huge week in college football. And let's just start with the most recent update, which is from Dan Patrick, who has news on what he believes and has heard will be happening with college football this week.
Here's the information I got almost an hour ago. The Big Ten and Pac-12 will cancel their football seasons tomorrow. The ACC and the Big 12 are on the fence. The SEC is trying to get a delay to have teams join them. The SEC is looking at exclusive TV contracts. So once again, then I followed up with my source and I said, so the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceled tomorrow. That's what I'm told this morning. Three Big Ten teams that I've spoken with said it's done. And I followed up by saying, so the SEC might go alone and bring in other schools. That's the latest. They're trying to buy time, according to my source, to see if the ACC or Big 12 will go along with them. So that's the information I've got this morning. And I was in touch with my source over the weekend, you know, that the commissioners met last night. And, as of yesterday, last night at 7 o'clock, the Big Ten may pull the plug tomorrow morning. I even had my source telling me on some of the votes, the Big Ten presidents, 12-2 not to play. Pac-12 doesn't want to be the first to cancel. Oklahoma and Texas are fighting the rest of the Big 12 to try to salvage the season. Mid-American Conference dropped the football season in the fall. They don't have the money to test. Safety a big issue, but the money was the impetus. Northern Illinois was pulling out, and that led the charge in the Mid-American Conference. So there's a lot going on. It could still change. My source said, hey, everything is on the table right now. It is the wild, wild west. But the latest is that the Big Ten and Pac-12 will cancel tomorrow. ACC, Big 12 on the fence. The SEC is trying to get a delay to have teams join them. The SEC is looking at exclusive TV contracts.
Holy smokes, what a freaking mess. And let us just step back and first say that, and this is just a gut punch. We talked about gut punches last week with Jaren Jackson injury. The idea that we may not have college football, given that we started this damn thing back in March, is just appalling. It's not as appalling that we don't have kids in school now, but it is absolutely an indictment on how we have handled this and from the start, and we should not be in this place. There are other countries that have kids in school. There are other countries that have fans in the stands. We essentially have 4% of the world's population and nearly 25% of the deaths. That's the deaths. That's not because we test more or whatever else. We have 4% of the world's population, nearly 25% of the deaths. We have effed it up, and it's heartbreaking. Now, having said that, where this is going to go, it's remarkable to see that the conferences, I guess it's not. Like, in the end, we know there is no joint leadership in college football. I've seen some who've been blaming college football leadership for the fact that there may be no football. And I honestly don't. Like, if all the conference commissioners had gotten together in March and started working on this, when you're doing it in a country where it is out of control, there's nothing the conference commissioners. So when I say leadership, I blame the leadership. I blame the leadership of our states and our, you know, we still have a mask order in Memphis, in Tennessee, et cetera. I blame the pandering of politicians who didn't ask enough of the country, and therefore here we are. But I don't really, as much as dysfunctional as college football leadership is, I don't blame the commissioner of the SEC or the commissioner of the Big Ten or the commissioner of the Big 12 for where we are or where we might be going this week. Could it have been more organized? Might it have been better, more organized? Sure. But the central issue would have remained. I don't think it's any surprise that if there's a conference that's going to cancel, the Big Ten, a Power Five, might be the one. And if there's a conference that's going to put its head down and go on and play, the SEC might be the one. Jeffrey, let's start with you. That doesn't shock you, does it?
No. I also think that there's a bit of a narrative, kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't think the SEC is going to be like, I think they're trying to do whatever they want. But much of the information about SEC football, it's coming from the league office. It's coming from those in athletics. It's not coming from the presidents. And in the end, the league office and the coaches, the athletics people in the SEC, they originally wanted the 9-game or 10-game schedule in which they get to keep the out-of-conference team. Well, the president said, uh-uh. That's not happening. We are only doing, you know, we can't have that. And I think there's kind of like the idea. It's like, well, of course the SEC is going to keep trying to play. Well, they've been trying to do a lot of things, and inevitably they end up doing exactly what everyone else is doing.
Is that what, by the way, what the hell happened over the weekend? Like, as you know, I have been, pounding the drum since March that we have to take this seriously or we're going to be lose things. And you know, when John McCullers came on our show and said we are not going to have fans in the stands at football games like we did in the fall, everyone said he was crazy. And the point was if we take action now, we can avoid this. That was the plan, right? The reason that you bring it up is you say, listen, this is what the future could hold. It may seem like a long time from now, but start acting now as if we want to save things in the fall. And I've been pounding that drum from the beginning. But having said that, I don't really know what happened over the damn weekend that changed us from going from here are the two extra games that every SEC team is going to play.
Yep.
To by Sunday night, we're going to cancel the season. Some people say politics. Like, this is
no, no. Here's what changed,
this is
Jeff.
Jeff,
here's what changed. The Pac-12, and there were some people that when the players put out their proposal, they rolled their eyes like, that's not a good negotiation topic, or that's not a good negotiation strategy. Like, they're being ridiculous. There were plenty of attorneys that advised the universities, this is not something that we should just laugh at and act as if it's not important. This very much could put our entire business model very much in jeopardy.
Yeah, I will tell you this. I do not believe that COVID is a pretext to shut down everything because they're free. I mean, very clearly, college football powers that be do not like the idea of amateurism. right? I mean, do not like the idea of professionalism, do not like the idea of a union, et cetera. I do not believe, and do I believe that, that there are ways in that these things intersect? Like, for example, they're already worried about liability, COVID, testing, all kinds of issues, right? So you have the players now talking about wanting a voice, et cetera. You shrug that off. You ignore their voice. You plow ahead. People get sick. Grandparents get sick and die. Lawsuits can happen. I do think they can intersect in that way. Do I believe that the Big Ten presidents or the Pac-12 presidents think it's safe to play football? COVID's not a real big problem, but hey, we'll use COVID as a way of pulling the plug on the unions or the players' union. I do not believe that at all. I do not believe that at all. Can those things intersect in certain ways? Sure. Obviously, the first
I disagree with you on the amount of leverage players have here. And I think last week we were discussing this topic, and you're like, well, it doesn't feel like the players have the leverage right now, because in the end, people are saying, well, it's about money. If there is no money, they don't have the
players
leverage.
Players absolutely have leverage. They've always had leverage.
I think they have more leverage than ever.
They just didn't know how much leverage they have. They're going to have leverage now. I just don't believe they're using COVID as a pretext to get rid of a union. I don't believe that at all. I believe they hate the idea of a union? Here's the truth. This gets into the weeds, but you can unionize with respect to public institutions, private institutions. You can't with respect to public institutions. There can be no. The University of Memphis could not have a players' union.
Right.
That's not what it doesn't exist in that universe. So anyway, this is getting way too complicated. The other funny thing that happened over the weekend was, of course, that the players started to tweet, "We want to play," right?
Is it
and
funny?
All over.
I don't think it's very funny.
No, but hold on. The funny part is what's going to happen next, and I will get your thoughts on this
okay.
in a minute.
I was a little shocked.
The players are tweeting, "We want to play. We want to play. We want to play. We want to play." I have always thought the players wanted to play. Like even. It's very clear to me the players want to play. 90-95% of the players want to play. You know what else? Most kids want to be in school right now. Most married couples want to have a wedding. Most, like, who doesn't want to have whatever is taken away from them? Who wouldn't rather have that thing, right? Everyone wants. It doesn't shock me at all that the players want to play. So what happened, though, was the deniers out there all of a sudden started retweeting the players and saying, "Hey, why don't you listen to the players?" Now, mind you, these are the same people who once upon a time, when the players said they might want to be paid, or they might want to be, you know, a union, or might want whatever, or might say Black Lives Matter, they weren't listening to the players then. But now that the players are saying we want to play, they're all, "Hey, let's listen to the players. Look at the players there. Trevor Lawrence wants to play. Justin Fields wants to play. Woohoo! Everyone wants to play." And so then what happened last night is the players got together and had a conference call and put out a statement uniting all kinds of players from all kinds of conferences, from the Pac-12, from the ACC, from the SEC. And they put out a statement, and they said, "Absolutely, we want to play, and we want a voice in our COVID protocols, and we want to be able to opt out of the season and keep our scholarship if we wish. And we want to, by the way, have a, if not a union, a players association of some point." So that's what they, and all of a sudden the people who were saying, "Listen to the players," now, if you really listen to the players, yes, they want to play. They also want some other things. They want to be paid. They want to have a voice in what happens from a health perspective. And I certainly hope that the folks who were listening to the players when they said they want to play are still listening to the players now, that they want some other things in addition to wanting to play. Drew, what were you going to say?
I just was going to say, it's just depressing. Like, the whole thing, it's sad. It makes me feel sad to see the players say, "We want to play." That's my overwhelming reaction, because, you know, this is their life. And for a lot of them, especially the really good players, like, it's also going to be their livelihood very soon. And so to not play can really hurt them. And it makes me sad.
The idea of no college football would make me extraordinarily sad. Like, it is the lifeblood, the sort of social lifeblood of the South, more so, clearly, than the NFL. And it's not just it's the players who want to play. And honestly, I'm less worried about Trevor Lawrence, who's going to be playing for the next 15 years, than I am Brady White, right, who may or may not be. Like, he needs to show something. He definitely wants to play. You know, DeMonte Coxey, does he want to play? Of course he wants to play. He came back to play another year to show someone. Those guys have things that they have to prove. And then all the people who have things connected, all the businesses and whatever, like those, like, we need college football. I'm in no illusions like that. We don't need it as much as we need schools, but we need it. It's really sad that the first day of school for a lot of people today in our area is sitting in front of a computer on Zoom.
It's just crushing. And the thing that you mentioned about the businesses too, like, especially going to school at Alabama, is like, there's nothing there besides that college, right? And so people's livelihoods depend on those weekends. The population triples in that town on game day. So, I mean, it is more crushing than just Oxford, just down the road.
Like, what are all those restaurants going to do in Oxford without football weekends? It's like taking away Christmas from a realtor. Like, from a retailer. Yeah. Right. It's just freaking.
What does it say? It's devastating. What does it say if there's high school football going on, but there's no
college? The idea that there's high school football is so freaking stupid. I mean, it's just so freaking stupid. And it says we have a moron for a governor. It's offensive.
Oh, I got him started now.
it's just so, like, at least in college football, you can say, all right, there's the health considerations on the one hand, and there's all these financial implications on the other. And so it's a hard call, right? We got to figure out a way to play, because these universities are going to be devastated, because, like, people are going to lose their jobs. There's literally nothing on the other side. This is not complicated for high school football. The idea that literally it's too dangerous to play college football, looks like it's going to be, right? Looks like it is now. It's too bad to play college football, but we're throwing the high school kids out there who are then going to go back into their high schools and spread COVID. It's just insanity. It's just total insanity that we're playing high school football. The misplaced priorities. It's why we're here. Let's be honest. Our unwillingness. We are soft as a country. SAWFT. Soft. As a country, that we can't give a damn thing up, so that in 3 months we might be better off, right? If we had given more up for longer, taken it seriously in March, April, and May, we would not be here. We have no backbone, no spine, no ability to sacrifice anything. You know, our relatives are freaking storming the damn beaches of Normandy, our ancestors, and we can't wear a flipping mask. Just insane. And we can't give up high school football when it's obvious the thing to do. When the health people in Memphis, Shelby County health people, tell you, we don't believe you should be playing football. Oh, no, we're going to play football. Why? Because we like it. Just stupid. So anyway, so what do we think is going to happen here? Jeffrey, what's going to happen here? And what does this mean for Memphis? Like, the AAC has a call tomorrow, evidently, tomorrow morning. That's when they're going to be thinking about it. We haven't heard much about the AAC.
Mike Oreska is going to join Giannotto and Jeffrey at 3:25 today.
How do you see this unfolding?
I think it's inevitable. There's not going to be a college football season this year. And I don't know, what does that mean? There's no college football. I mean, it means that sports across the country are going to be canceled. You know what I mean? And cut, I guess, is probably the better word to say, because – and then what, you know, does the NCAA, I believe the requirement, I think you have to have 15 total sports teams to be an NCAA member at the Division I level. Is there going to be a waiver that's going to say, hey, these are unprecedented times, you know, we're going to let the schools try to.
Well, let's start back with what's going to happen this week. So you think this week every single conference will cancel football this week? Is that your prediction? Or are you thinking, I mean, the SEC is not starting till mid-September anyway. They can wait, right?
Yes.
Now, do you think this week we are going to see every conference cancel?
You could tell me the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC try to hang on through the end of the week, because, you know, it's unclear to me if the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are going to, in the next 24 hours, they're going to cancel it. You could convince me that they try to hang on through the weekend, maybe into next week. But I think the result is inevitable that it's going to be canceled.
It's inevitable it's going to be canceled. Drew, are you predicting the same thing?
Yeah, I don't know the timing of when it'll get canceled. But, yeah, and it, to be honest, it's just hitting me right now. Like, I'm just starting to realize what this
– My college football group chat, I had to put in a video of Kelly Clarkson just to let everyone just, you know, feel something.
Yeah.
Well, and you two both are, like, your main thing is college football. Right. I mean, emotionally for both of you.
Yeah. I would say I'd say the NFL. I think college football is like that adorably flawed product that I very much enjoy and adore. But in terms of do I enjoy watching an NFL game or a college game, even, you know, a high level college game versus, you know, a couple of.
Yeah, but you bet more on college football. Let's be honest, like this show.
Well, it's because it's you can betting college football is easier than betting the NFL.
Yeah, right? The NFL.
Yes.
This show, though, for example, like anyone who thinks I'm happy about this, like we build our show around college football. Here's what we do on Mondays. We do Fight Song Roundup, right? I mean, that's so we can talk. We've come up with all these vehicles so we can talk about college football. We have Sally on every single, you know,
Barrett,
week.
Yeah, Barrett's every Friday.
Barrett Sally, we have your Jeff's bets on every, you know, we have your bets on every single week where we make money. We have, like, college football is the lifeblood, and it's freaking insane to think we may lose it. Is it a couple of things I did want to address? One is lots of people say you saw this a lot. College football players safer on campus playing football than at home. In some ways, well, first of all, I don't disagree with that, right? I don't disagree. And it's not just from COVID. It's from the circumstances of their lives at home. There's a lot of difficult things that a lot of college football players face at home. So that is certainly true. I will say this, like, if DeMonte Coxey wants to stay just to take whatever, you know, they're not kicking him out of school. Like, you don't have to go home if you're a college football player and you're not playing this fall. Now, you might choose to. The lack of structure, the lack of something to look forward to, you've been building toward the season. I don't rule out that some might. But I actually think most college football players aren't going home. Most college football players are staying in college and looking forward to the next season and working towards the next season whenever it is. So I think that choice that a lot of people raise on social media is not, in fact, a choice.
I like don't necessarily agree that it's true either. To me,
you don't think most football players are going to stay.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about safer on campus than at home. Because while it may be true, two things can be true here. One, it can be true that, I mean, you're more likely to know if you have it if you're at school and you're getting tested. But you also can't convince me that every player on the football team is gonna, you know, we've seen it in baseball.
You're probably more likely to get it in a football locker.
But at least you're gonna know. But at least you're gonna know. So I mean, and you are
you'll
gonna
be
have better access.
And you'll be, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So that's all true. But in terms of getting it, I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Yeah, I can see that. And so then the other question is these we've talked about they're gonna cancel football for the fall. Are they gonna cancel it? Or are they going to postpone it? And are either of you people who think there is a better chance to play it in the spring? It is unlikely by the spring there will be any kind of vaccine. I mean, we're talking about January, February is starting, right? And there could conceivably, in a perfect world, be a vaccine in January and February that's being started, but there won't be widespread distribution of the vaccine by the time they would play football again. And of course, then you still run into the issue of what happens to the next football season. When does it start? Does it start next October? Because you do need a break. And of course, all the players who might leave to get ready for the draft, et cetera. No one is saying that is a perfect solution. But is it I will say, if we act right between now and February, you could have the virus under better control than we have it now. New York was worse off once upon a time than it is now. Like, it's possible, absent a vaccine, to do better at this, to be through it, to be look like you're kind of slightly on the other side if you do the right things. So I really don't know. I don't even know what I have not developed an opinion on whether I think it is more likely in the spring. I'd probably like John McCullers to answer that. Do either of you think postponing to the spring is either likely or workable?
No, I do not.
Nope.
Why not?
I think it's obviously a complicated issue, but in terms of I've never bought spring football as a real option, and it has nothing to do with, well, then the best players are going to sit out. That affects maybe 25 to 50 players.
Like, so what does it have to do?
It has to do with the way that if you postpone football to the spring, you're basically taking the most expensive part of your business, which is college sports. You're postponing it to the spring. You're putting everything on hold, and there's no guarantee that it's going to get to play. So it becomes you're going to continue to spend all of this money, and it's just it's financially
but
not.
But aren't you spending the money anyway? Why
also,
are you not spending the money?
I don't buy. I'll tell you. I know you may disagree with me on this, but it's a reality because I've talked to people that know this idea that if they postpone college football to the spring, that they're still the same attractive TV product, it's not necessarily the case.
No, I didn't say it's the same money. I'm saying what's the money they're spending? That you're saying
well, because they'll be paying
money.
Their staff, you know, the stabs.
But you think so if they postpone it to next fall, okay, they say we're just canceling.
Correct.
You think everyone's going to fire their staff?
I don't think there's going to be firings, but I think they'll.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.